the point to everyone. I know that justice is right and guilt will not be participating. But any of today's arguments, with that in mind, our first case of the day is State vs. Mark P. Nunez. Ms. Radio, good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
There's question be returned,
what was left off?
Specifically, the policy requires that the inventory list contain both all identified items. In this case, the inventory sheet did not list either the pipe or the canister that contained the methamphetamine on the inventory sheet.
So it was the actual contraband that was left off, not the belongings in the car that would be inventory.
As far as we know from the evidence, yes, Your Honor, but given that that part of the policy wasn't complied with, I don't think we can know what else might have been left off at this point. I mean, that's why the policy does require a full and complete list.
So, is it your argument that there's constitutional law that a slipshod inventory search is unconstitutional because it's not performed very well?
No, Your Honor. The state correctly points to some extra jurisdictional case law, noting that a mere technical violation or a minor violation of an inventory policy might not invalidate the constitutionality of the search. However, this isn't a case like that. These violations were serious. There were three different violations of the policy, and they went to both the timing of the search and the purpose of the search itself, which is to generate a comprehensive inventory of the items.
Now, with respect to the keys, the state makes an alternative argument that they would have inevitably been discovered. How do you respond to that?
Your Honor, I think that inevitable discovery argument here is a logical fallacy. There was no independent route by which the police would have located these keys. Rather, the state argument is that if the sergeant hadn't performed an improper inventory search, they would have eventually performed a proper inventory search. But allowing that logic, law enforcement could search any car under the guise of an inventory search at any point, and then later justify it by saying that they would have eventually done a proper inventory search. So I don't think that argument succeeds here. Additionally, this isn't a case, as many of the cases cited by the state, in which there is no policy introduced into the record at all, or which an officer is testifying about his understanding of the policy. In fact, there's a written express policy introduced into evidence in this case. There's no dispute about the language in it. It's not ambiguous. It's very clear what it requires. And herein, those policies were complied with in three important ways. So with that, we would respectfully ask the court to reverse the district court's decision, and I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal unless there are further.
Did you cite State v. Newman in your brief?
Yes, Your Honor.
And is this the same situation as State v. Newman?
There's obviously some factual differences between State v. Newman. As the state points out, the violation in Newman had more to do with the timing of the search, and that it was conducted hours later after the defendant in that case had been arrested and taken into custody. However, what is similar and analogous to this case is that it involves an egregious violation of the express policies for conducting an inventory search. In this case, those violations didn't have to do as much with a much later search, although the preliminary search for the keys arguably does go to the timing of when inventory is appropriate. But the violations also went to not complying with the very underlying policy of having an inventory search, which is to create a complete and comprehensive list of all
make sure I understand your argument, the egregious violations are leaving the contraband off the list. I'm not filling out a separate sheet that lists what was seized.
Correct. Not tracking the evidence from the inventory to the evidence log to know whether that evidence existed in the car, what happened to it, what property should be returned versus that which is being held by the department, and again, the preliminary search of that vehicle for the keys in which the deputy admits he was just rummaging, he was looking for an item that wasn't necessary to the inventory, and he wasn't even completing a log at that time.
Those hardly sound to me like the sorts of things that the Founding Fathers were standing on stumps shouting about. Do they to you?
They do, Your Honor. The inventory section exception is narrow in that it's supposed to take a caretaking function. It's not investigative in the least. The police here, if they had suspicions, they could have waited and gotten a warrant to search the car for drugs. They could have asked Virginia for his consent to search the car. Instead, they're relying on this very narrow exception, which does not go to the state's investigative power, but rather a protective function for both the defendant and the state.
Are you saying that what happened here impedes the proof of the chain of custody of the items of evidence?
I do think that that's a concern, and I think that's part of the rationale behind the inventory search, is so that the state has an accurate law of what was in a defendant's property, what should be returned to him or her, and what evidence is being seized and kept by the state in terms of a criminal prosecution.
But wouldn't that argument redound to the defendant's benefit if what was not listed was the contraband? Isn't the contraband the necessary evidence at trial to prove the charge that was the subject of the prosecution?
Arguably, yes, that could work in the defendant's favor. However, in this case, given that it was only justified under the inventory search, if I may finish, Your Honor, I don't think that that's a valid justification here. The state's trying to retroactively justify a search under this very narrow exception, which frankly just doesn't fit the written policies that weren't complied with. We'd ask this court to please reverse.
Thank you
very much. Mr. Meyer, good morning to you.
May it please the court. My name is Joe Meyer. I'm Assistant Attorney General here on behalf of the appellee, the state of Nebraska. Just to start, the state would agree with one particular statement by the appellant made during the argument that this policy is not ambiguous. And it's in fact very clear. Taking a look at the policy, which was admitted as Exhibit 2, you can see that the policy gives officers no discretion in these cases. It gives no discretion in three important ways: the decision to impound, the decision whether to search, and then also the scope of the search. And that's why in our brief we asked for this court to hold that if a policy sufficiently limits officers' discretion in both whether to search the vehicle and then the scope of the search, particularly when it's related to canister containers, then that is enough to satisfy constitutional both the Fourth Amendment.
When does a slipshod search cross the line to an unconstitutional search?
I think if the policy has left some discretion to the officers in those decisions, in the decision to search or in the decision to open the container. So, I was able to find a certified case out of the 8th Circuit, United States v. Taylor, 636 F3rd 461. That was where the Kansas City Police Department's policy allowed police to search. One of the reasons police could search under the inventory exception was if they believed this vehicle was used in the commission of a crime. And so, the court in that case, seeing it as the officer used their discretion to make the decision even whether to search, then went and saw various reasons to find bad motive and not good faith, and evaluated that search for an improper inventory of the items. So, I guess, responding to the, and we think that the approach the state suggests is a good one to follow, because as the touchstone of the Fourth Amendment, and specifically warrantless searches, is reasonableness. And the reasonableness of a search is determined based upon the facts known at the time of the intrusion. That comes from the United States Supreme Court. So I don't think it's proper to look, especially at a policy like this, to say that the improper filling out of the police forms is enough to show bad faith here, because ultimately this policy is very clear-cut and does not leave any discretion to the officer.
Are you making a distinction between the facts as to how the search was conducted as compared to the paperwork describing what happened? Are you saying what happened's okay, the paperwork wasn't okay?
Yeah, any problems with the paperwork, as we say in a brief, as the state says in its brief, is pretty much a technical violation that doesn't invalidate the search, especially, when, as Justice Kavanaugh noted, the only two items left off the inventory forms were contraband. I would point out that those items are actually referred to in a report form, which was admitted in evidence. And I think, if this court wanted to go through the dash cam video, which is Exhibit 1, is great evidence of what actually happened in this search. Especially if the court's going to do a totality of the circumstances analysis, looking for good faith or bad faith, then Exhibit 1 is specifically illustrative. Sergeant Hoffman is the one searching methamphetamine, don't end up on the inventory form, which is done by another officer. They end up on the police report, which is filled out by the actual officer who sees the item. So, I mean, the extent that there is a problem with paperwork, the state submits a slip up, two officers, you know, one officer is arresting the appellant to seemingly contraband, the other officer is filling out the paperwork.
What is the purpose of an exclusionary rule?
As a deterrent to police bad faith.
And why is it not applied in this situation?
Because there is no bad faith here, Your Honor. The body cam video is illustrative of that. The decision was made to arrest the appellant. He was pulled over and was handed a minor child in the car. So under the policy, the vehicle was being impounded. It was on a public roadway. There was no problem there. Two other deputies show up. The first deputy shows up, takes the boy to the relative's house. The second deputy is Lieutenant Groves, who helps with the search. And even before the keys or anything of that is decided, Sergeant Hoffman tells Lieutenant Groves the car will be towed. So, and now under the policy, if the car is to be towed, then it has to be inventory. So there is no bad faith here. As discussed during my opposing counsel's arguments, the whole decision to go look for the keys actually helps the defendant's benefit.
So if the keys were found when they were removing the child, the child's in the car, they removed the child to get the child safe, even they found the keys at that point, would we have an issue?
No, and if the keys had been on the adult's person, then we wouldn't have an issue either. No. And another clarification, I mean, I think, you know, there is no constitutional requirement that policies be written, and that is from the state being built in. You know, preference is for written policies, but, and you know, and the policy here is written, but to the extent that police go looking for the keys, same message that can be part of an unwritten policy, and Sergeant Hoffman's testimony was that it was pursuant to the policy, you know, regardless of whether it's actually in the written policy or not. And the state was, you know, a few pages after the part cited by the appellant, Sergeant Hoffman, on redirect, actually said, this is our policy. We look for the keys.
Unwritten policy.
Yes. So, and as Sid mentioned in this brief, I think the keys can even be understood as a technical violation because it only goes to the timing of the search. The search wasn't going to happen at the dash cam, but the body cam footage shows that makes that clear. The search was going to happen, whether it happened 5 minutes before and look for the keys or not. And in fact, the facts point out that Pike is found while police are looking for the keys, but Matt is actually found later on. Now, the state would say it's all part of the same search, not actually two distinct searches. Chief Justice brought up, the state believes that this case is very distinguishable from Newman because in Newman, that case dealt with the decision to search. The defendant in that case was arrested in Nevada. The Nevada authorities took his suitcases, did not search them, placed them in the evidence of full property. Lincoln police then called Nevada and said, hey, did you see the defendant with wearing these clothes, this clothing? We're looking for this clothing. This is the clothing worn by the perpetrator of the sexual assault. That had been 3 hours after the defendant was arrested. The Nevada authorities go into the suitcases and find the evidence. So
is the purpose of the search important then?
Yes, because ultimately, you know, the police are either acting in their investigatory function or in their caretaking function. And in Newman, police were both, you know, undeniably acting in their investigatory function based upon a phone call from Lincoln police. Here, and in a proper inventory search, police are only acting under their caretaking function. So, you know, opposing counsel made an argument that the police could have asked for a warrant here. I don't see how the police could have asked for a warrant here. They have no probable cause for a warrant. If they have probable cause to believe that there was a contraband in the car, then they could have used the automobile
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. Our next case of the day is in